We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
How about I go ahead and address the larger than average elephant in the room?
No, I have never coached the sport that you folks call football. And heck, you could fill two internets with what I don't know about football.
Hold on, man. If I were to get fired from a job where I'm putting cleats in the trunk of my car.
You got the boot for putting boots in the boot.
I love that. You know what the happiest animal on earth is? It's a goldfish. You know why?
No.
Got a 10-second memory. Be a goldfish, Sam.
All right, welcome back to Big Screen Sports, the podcast where all movies are sports movies. I am your host, Kyle Bandujo, and we are at another episode of our Ted Lasso recap, season 3, episode 7. What a heater. I'll get into it in the episode, but this one felt a lot like season 1, season 2 vibes to me. Alex is here, Caroline is here, joining us for the first time, The Athletic's Nicole Auerbach, so A lot of fun in this one. Before we get into it, I want to shout out our Big Screen Sports Patreon group, especially our Big Chill producer level patrons. That is Aaron Figueroa, Mike Schubert, Steve Rogers, Kevin Frost, Mike D, Ryan Ager, Mike Dries, Chris Mikoski, John Craig, Sam Smith, Zach Rich, Jason Alba, Stephen DeBoe, Dan McFall, Kevin Inkelman, Mac Lindsay, Kurt Ritchie, Robert Dove, Jim Scroggs, Andrew Teagle, and Classic Stadium Fire. Big thanks to them and all of our patrons. It is eternally humbling how long that takes me to read now. Very grateful for all the patrons supporting the show. If you want to support the show, go to patreon.com/bigscreensports. You get these episodes early, you get them ad free, get some other stuff. Go check out the Patreon. With that, let's jump right into it. Ted Lasso, season 3, episode 7. All right, joining me tonight on Big Screen Sports to recap season 3, episode 7 of Ted Lasso, it is my co-host from For the Win and Bet For the Win, Alex McDaniel and Caroline Darney. And joining us for the first time, I'm so excited, from The Athletic, Nicole Auerbach. Guys, are the Greyhounds back?
We're back, baby.
We're back.
Baby!
I am so excited this to is be exciting. On with you guys. I feel like I finally made it.
It's a big step.
You probably won't feel that way in like 30 minutes.
30 minutes is a little generous, but we'll take it.
It is.
We'll take it.
It is. Let's all shout out the content. Alex, Caroline, what kind of content are we looking
all
at?
All the content.
Right now?
It's all there.
So all much the content. NFL draft, new Black Mirror trailer dropped today.
Ooh.
And that looked terrifying. And exactly what I expected. So
some
excited about that.
Negative Ted Lasso content coming out soon, right? Isn't Ooh. Brian writing about, or would he, was he just, that was just his opinion.
That was just his opinion. He's one of our writers. So,
all the men on our staff hate the show.
Don't like
Caroline
the season.
Is like, leaking the slack. Yeah.
Like have
soon.
Always hated the show or just
no,
like,
just season. Not right now. So of the group of people at For the Win who watch the show, all of the men hate it. They're like, there's too much going on.
Yes.
It's not what I wanted to see. They don't know what to do anymore. And then all the girls who like it, aka me and Caroline.
And I'm like, this is every episode. I'm like, no, this is now the best episode. Like, I love this season. And I feel like, because a lot of the complaints are like, it's too disjointed. There's too many storylines. And I'm like, I kind of see how, I mean, there's a few things where I'm like, okay, I would like to see I would love to see more scenes of like Keeley back in the clubhouse, like doing the PR pitches with the boys. Mm-hmm. Like that's, they thrive in that. Like, I love that. But I also, it hasn't ruined anything for me that she, because a lot of people, like a couple of guys are like, oh, the whole storyline feels like fluff. Like, why are we even, like, why send her to her own PR company? Like, the whole thing, like, she feels like her story stagnated. I can kind of, but I've loved this season. And I think that all when you have an ensemble cast, because then if they didn't do stuff with, you know, then you'd say like, well, so-and-so isn't getting enough shine. So I don't know. I think they've done a good job. I love it.
I'm proud of us for not even getting to the point where we can ask Nicole what she's got going on at The Athletic before we dive in. We
just straight
in. We never change.
Yeah, sorry.
We never change.
Wow, you guys told, no, real quick, you guys told me that you were sticklers for the rundown, for the outline.
That's a lie.
It's a very serious operation.
Quickly, I was bamboozled. Yeah, bamboozled in my preparation for this podcast. Things are good at The Athletic. I am mostly covering spring meetings for college football and CFP meetings, but also on my podcast this week, Power Hour, I have some of my interviews with the cast of Ted Lasso.
Woo!
Which, yay, basically the bar to clear to be invited on your guys' show was to interview most of the cast.
That's not
of Ted
true.
Lasso. That is definitely true.
That's
but that
not
did happen
true.
This week. So
50% of this podcast has now talked to Christo Fernandez, and Kyle and I are in the sad 50%.
Me and Caroline are just nope.
Nicole got a Cheerio from the one and only Phil Dunster, which is
I did. It's a Cheerio mate and a little like a hand wave, like, oh, how could you, you know, like it's adorable. Kyle, I will send you the audio. You can try to splice it into this show if you're technologically savvy enough, because it's really delightful. I had to clip it out separately. It's adorable.
Well, it's been a blast to watch him, grow. I think it's been the best character arc. So, Phil, I've got to go. Time is up, but thank you so much. I appreciate
it. Thanks, mate. Cheerio.
And he's going to teach Alex how to ride a bike now. So
he did say that he had never taught an adult or a child how to ride a bike before, and that it was very funny to watch Brett Goldstein de-learn. Like, remind his brain not to know how to ride a bicycle. I thought that was a great tidbit.
Yeah.
Well, everyone go check that out. I have nothing to promote. you know, just keep listening to the show. We will be lighting the show on fire if the Cowboys trade up draft collateral to go up and get a running back. I will cease to exist on this planet. So, anyways. Ted Lasso, season 3, episode 7. I'm calling this the episode formerly known as Boxes or The Strings That Bind Us, because they had called it Boxes, they then did not call it Boxes, and they both titles fit. The Greyhounds try a new strategy that has everyone thinking outside the box. Boxes even in the summary. Sam prepares to host a VIP guest at Ola's. Guys, what's the biggest takeaway? I think this season more than the others has been segmented and we have certain themes. What is, Caroline, what is the biggest takeaway from this episode?
Well, I think this one is Ted slash Coach Ted slash the Greyhounds are back, baby. Like,
Greyhounds are back.
It was a really fun episode too, because you can't have them get all the way back at once. I think they did a really, really great job of them being a complete mess for the first half against Arsenal. And then they were like, figured out, courtesy of Jamie Tart being a dick. Actually, that's the theme of this episode. It's dicks.
It's dicks. Dick ropes.
Yeah, but, and it's once again proved to us that it's actually not a rom-com. It is a show about fathers and sons, folks. It is a show about fathers
and
sons.
Say it like
sons.
Right, or it doesn't count. Do the Rex Thompson voice, or you can't talk about fathers and sons.
I don't know if I actually know.
Do you have
a
Wright Thompson?
I just don't know if I know what he sounds like.
I can't. Jason Kirk could do it better.
It's like grizzled, gravelly.
Fathers and sons.
Yeah.
He does not sound like that at all.
Gravel Southern.
Okay. I'll have to.
Is he a Mississippi guy, Alex?
He's absolutely a Mississippi guy. He's from the Delta, yeah, lives in Oxford.
Does he have the Cornbread Volume 7? Biscuits Volume 7?
His writing has been in probably every Cornbread Nation anthology, actually.
Love it. See, perfect fit. Look at that. Shaking hands.
So I think that Caroline stole my idea because I also think this is about dads. But I was reading some stuff as I was preparing because I also did get to interview James Lance, who is Trent Crim, who I did almost accidentally just call Trent, which that felt like a mistake.
Love it.
This was my first, you know, press junket, and it was a very easy mistake to make, especially because I did not know his name prior. But I was reading about his backstory that he invented for himself about why Trent was so horrible, like right in the beginning, and trying to be mean to Ted and kind of gotcha. And obviously we saw that flashback with him and Roy later. And he made this whole backstory about how, you know, he just had this terrible father. And he mentioned it when we talked this week, and he was saying how, like, Jason Sudeikis immediately was like, yeah, that's great. Like, this whole show is about bad dads. And Sam's dad is the opposite of a bad dad. He is the best dad. He is all of our dads. I love him so much already. Every single word he said, I adored. And so I think that this was the first time in a long time that we've seen like a really great father figure. And I felt like that was one of the main takeaways. Obviously there was a lot about like the team building. We've been seeing the team chemistry come back, and I loved the scene in the locker room where they were all kind of like tossing the water bottle, like tossing all the stuff back and forth, back and forth. So the connectedness, obviously it was a theme named based on the title, but to me, like this, so many episodes of the show and the relationships are about father-son relationships. And so we've heard so much about Sam's dad, finally getting to see it, witness it, watch it all play out. I think that was my main takeaway.
Guys, did you notice that we started to go off into a tangent about Wright Thompson and Cornbread Nation, and Nicole brought us right back?
Yeah, that's why she's here.
The podcast is hers now.
Guys, are you just gonna like hire me to do this for every
yes.
show?
Yeah. It is
yours.
Okay. Get us back. Like,
let me just, as an aside, let me tell you, we have a group text. I can't tell you how many times we go off on this stuff. Nicole's always the one who's like, okay, focus.
What were we just talking about?
Well, usually it has to come back to Glenn Powell, but that is Glenn a Powell. Separate.
Just like this podcast.
Literally
just like this podcast.
Yeah. See, she fits that's right what I'm in. Here
for. But that's usually the main topic. Like that's the one we don't veer away from.
That's true.
Of course. Alex, is this final form for the Greyhounds? Is Ted this implementation of total football, Jamie stepping up, playing through him? Does Ted have any more like cards to pull, or is this our team, and is this our strategy, and is this our mantra that is taking us through the finale of Ted Lasso?
I mean, I think something they've been building toward that's certainly playing out now, and Trent got so excited about it, is like, there's kind of this underlying message the whole series, right? That if Ted does enough stuff behind the scenes to bring everyone together and to make people be there for each other and make people understand what it means to work with other people at the same time, that it will succeed, right? And so much of this season, I feel like the first part has been just so frustrating because we're all faced with the fact that like, dude, you can be as positive as you want, but you've got to get something together, right? Like, you know, you're not good at this. You're close to being fired. We all know he wants to move on, but I think they've certainly clicked. And I think there were a lot of things throughout the episode that showed, especially with Sam's restaurant, that they have gelled again as a team and they are there for each other and kind of understand what that role is. And so, you know, I'm excited to see the next episode, but also I'm not because I saw the preview and I'm worried it's going to be very dramatic.
No.
But yeah, I think things are going to come together for them. I mean, look at Jamie. What was my nickname? Alex, Jamie will never be redeemed. I don't think I ever said never, dear listener. But if I did, Alex, I wouldn't be surprised.
I can't believe that would even be a hot take. We even saw Jamie become better over the course of season one.
Well, I know.
That feels out of character for you, even though you can be dramatic and
there were feelings involved.
We were very emotional and angry about how he was treating people.
I don't think I said never, though. I think I said, what I should have said maybe, or how I actually feel is like, I'm I'm really interested to see how the writers kind of pull me out of how I feel about him. Because at that point in the season, I felt like we had sort of been pushed and pulled a little bit. And I liked that because I always thought the writing was just brilliant and how they pulled us through it. And it was kind of the same thing with Nate. Is like, even at the end of last season, we know Nate's going to be redeemed. We're on that journey. I'm more curious about how they're going to do it. So
big steps this week.
I mean, yeah, we're on that road right now. And that was what I was gonna shift to as a big takeaway and kind of something that was on really its own track this episode is Nate. We learn a little bit more about his family. We meet his sister. We meet his
sister's
niece
a
with
star.
The boxes.
His sister is a star.
We find
Nicole,
out his...
Just saying.
That's right. Just throwing it out there.
We find out his shitty dad was once kind of romantic, which is interesting. We had, throughout this, going to be dispersing some questions from our Big Screen Sports Patreon group. And Kurt Ritchie asked, was Nate learning that his dad had the same indecisiveness when he was younger, start his turn for his comeback into being a good person? Was that the start, or is it, I think it's been slowly but surely, but I think it was really interesting, Nate getting an insight into his dad not being a shithead.
I think it really showed. So Nate has always been about approval and getting feedback that he's doing great, that he like, and not from the very beginning where people didn't remember his name, but that was like what he thrived off of and where he has issues. Cause like, even when you go back to like the Wonder Kids stuff, like his pictures on the back of the newspaper as his dad's reading it and his dad's not looking at it. And like, and then the only thing he has to say is, isn't it Wunderkind? And so always striving to get the like approval of his dad. And I think this was kind of like, weakness in the dad's armor, where it's like this guy who's always seemed so serious, so put together, so stiff, had this thing, this moment where he made this beautiful map to ask woman out on a date. Whether or not I've go back and forth like both the box. Well, you never saw what we did see was in the gift box, like the box for Jade. But imagine some guy like unfurls a map in front of you and like no, like all these things. I'd be like, oh. Well, that's nice. I'm single. but I think it was, he had already started in some of those things. Like you saw just even in my favorite thing that Nate did this episode was probably when he went back into the bathroom, looked in the same mirror where he went the first time when he was trying to like get the guts up to say he wanted that table, where he got so angry at himself. He got angry at his own reflection, spit on the mirror, came out like, boss people around. He got what he wanted, but he did it in a way that was out of like character, right? And so this time he goes in there and he looks himself and that's when he makes the decision to leave and like make the box and like go back into Nate, I thought. And so I thought that was like the coolest, my favorite part about the whole thing. So I think the dad thing is just kind of a way that he gave himself permission to let some of this stuff go, I think.
Yeah, I think too, he also very much returned to his roots of making that box that he did in season one. And it was when he didn't care if he was going to get made fun of or, Jamie put a piece of gum in there and like whatever, right? But it's he wasn't afraid of the big grand gesture. And while, again, I'm with you, Caroline, I would not want someone to make a giant gesture like that. I think it was better that it got run over and that Jane did not have to open this embarrassing declaration of love. I think we are seeing that he is most comfortable at his favorite restaurant. That's not fancy. We saw him a lot more comfortable talking about this stuff with his mom and his sister than we've seen him comfortable talking about like anything in a long time. And it just like, to me, it shows that he missed those parts of him. And for as much as he thought he wanted to be famous and like everyone be talking about him and praising him, there was clearly an emptiness. And so I think it was just nice to see him return to some of the things that made him really, really, really happy back when he was a nobody, when we first met him and everyone really was rooting for him.
There's a patron question that I need Alex for, because these are the kind of details that she picks up. So this is something that I thought too. Jacqueline didn't think so, but I thought possibly. And this patron asking this question made me think that I wasn't crazy. Zach Rich asked, is Nate's hair changing back to its original color? I was looking and I was like, maybe.
There was some blonde going on. I noticed. So I'll have to go back and like look closely. So I've only watched it once, then I watched the first 15 minutes again. But yeah, there's a little bit going on, but I don't know if it's lighting or what, but I did notice that. And I saw a few people today say something about it. I think that's like a little too on the nose that they're just going to totally revert it back. I mean, that's ridiculous to have this guy go totally gray. Magic. Look at that. But I do think like the subtle, you know, little subtle changes, I certainly think that's possible. Yeah. So
I mean, it was not subtle at all when they went and made it extremely gray. Yeah.
Exactly.
So I definitely think that that is a possibility.
When she asked if there was anything alive in the box.
That was a good line. That was a good line.
But I also just love that whole scene. It was great because I was so worried that when he fell and embarrassed himself that he was going to give it up. Because that was a Nate that we had. That was a Nate that we knew. And when he like just dusted himself off and just said, I don't need the prop, essentially. Oh, I loved it. It was so sweet. And then when he thanked her for coming on the date. Thank you.
Jade is great, though. Like, she's down for it. I've really enjoyed the Jade that they've kept implementing her throughout the season.
Him, when he was looking through the window, was chef's kiss. Wonderful. Yeah. Well done by her.
Yeah, you can tell Jade can ignore just a lot of nonsense, and I think that's a byproduct of working for Derek, who is a fucking idiot. Like, she's just Jade knows when to just roll your eyes and keep cleaning the menus. Like, she's very much just like can focus on the task at hand. There's really one more kind of big pull. I guess this episode was kind of segmented, I guess, in my opinion, like four different ways. Let's talk about Jack and Keely. So, I mean, got a couple patron questions on this. Mike Dries asked if we think Jack will be like Rupert, which I will say I don't think she'll be like Rupert. But Aaron Figueroa said, how does Jack and Keely end?
With Roy coming back into the picture.
Yeah.
So this can... My worry is this will end bad. And the vibe I haven't been able to like pick up what Barbara's putting down for most of the season. I feel like with this, my wonder is, has she seen this before? Because she has been around to a lot of places. I assume she works for Jack's company that's funding these startups and things like that. I don't know. The whole situation has me very nervous. Very, very nervous. Nicole, what are your thoughts?
I hate it so much. The gifting situation made me deeply uncomfortable, like right out of the gate. And it just kept getting worse and worse and worse. And originally I liked it because I like the actress. I love her. For All Mankind. She is lovely.
Finally, I got someone. This is why I invited, though I wanted Nicole here. So there's someone else who's watched For All Mankind on the podcast.
One of
the patrons was Aaron Figueroa, who hit me up and said that For All Mankind rules. So the patrons are with you too, Caroline.
Yes. It does. So I was excited to see her. I liked, you know, just like a lot of the dynamic early. I thought that it was a very textbook rebound relationship type thing. I absolutely hated the gifts. I hated the like public display of affection in the office and like really rushing all of that. I'm with you, Caroline, where like I just feel like Keely not being in any scenes with Roy, like I miss that. I miss her interacting with all of them. And obviously like there's something in this that is going to bring her back into the world that we want her to be in. But I just don't like the way that this all went about. Like, I was so much more invested in Keely becoming a businesswoman and, like, some of the stuff with that, or even, like, handling employees and relationships like that versus love bombing and all of this. It is eventually going to push her back to Roy, which I can't wait. But I just thought that this was going to be like a more of a healthy rebound situation where then she figured out where she needed to be. And this does feel like it's going to be very messy, very complicated, and like very bad.
Alex, is the Keely Jones PR plot of it, I don't want to say like low point sounds bad, but just certainly the lower end of where this season has gone, because I kind of talked about this on last week's episode that Keely and Roy and their ascension, their growth as a couple, they have been a constant for us in both these seasons. And not only have we had them split apart, kind of just like Nicole said, the Keeley going out on her own has been waylaid in favor of what's going on with this relationship. And I'm curious your thoughts, because I think we were fully pumped at the end of last season for Keeley to start her own PR firm.
Yeah, I think it was this, you know, she was choosing herself. And even when Roy had his doubts in the finale, we were like, you know, she knows that she's on the right path. And it's not that she doesn't think that. I'm not very invested in her business. Like, the people she works with suck, except for Barbara. Like, there's no sort of camaraderie there that's even interesting. It's how external people interact with her.
I'm deeply worried I'm going to end up like that man who is always awkward when he sings. Like, I'm afraid I'm staring at myself.
Oh, love is love.
Love is love was one of, I wrote that down because I was like, there were a lot of very funny one-liners, but love is love, and him being like shouted down was
Barbara's like, stop it.
He tries so hard. And I think, like, in the beginning, the first episode, you know, when she's talking to Rebecca about her schedule, I have to schedule time to cry. I think we were really looking forward to, like, you know, Keeley's on her own now. Yeah, she's got a huge financial safety net, so I don't want to act like she's struggling. But this was her trying to figure out how to run a business, how to gain clients. Like, I realize that stuff sounds boring, but I think you could have done it in a way, especially with her level of clientele, that had made it more interesting. And, you know, when Jack came into the picture and I didn't really know where they were going with that, and then this episode clearly, like, okay, she's a device to show, you know, the love bombing is really terrible. Like, I'm not saying Jack's a horrible person and a lot of people go through it, but that's manipulation to make someone stay. And to watch Keeley go through it, and then to consider, like, okay, when we were introduced to her, she was in a bad relationship with Jamie, and we watched her get away from it and go to something good. And I think watching any character regress like that, in a different way, mind you, but still regress, is just hard. And I think that, for me, the Keeley storyline is the hardest one to stay invested in, because at this point, like, yeah, I would love to think that she and Roy end up together. I'm sure they will, but I don't know how to be invested in that at this point, outside of just how I felt last season. Like, there's nothing really this season kind of keeping me holding on to that. So,
but you did love the book gift, so there's that.
Okay, I'm sorry. That's a deal breaker. If somebody hands you a first edition anything of a writer that you like, and they wrote in it in, like, purple marker, are you fucking joking?
Yeah, I would lose my shit.
She even said, I get very jealous and I don't want you regifting that. Okay.
See, like, all of that was so bad. Like,
it's like a Lifetime movie.
A playful little line about being jealous. And it was like, nope, giant red flag waving in front of your face. But agreed. If you think that a first edition book is a priceless gift to give someone, then you should also know that they do not want you to ruin it.
Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah. That one hurt my soul.
The gifts were just her gifts were financial flexes and not meaningful. And I think that's the, like, there wasn't.
Yeah, because we don't have, like, an established, like, Keeley love for Jane Austen. Like, there wasn't, like, if that had been, you know, and she, the offhanded mention of, like, oh yeah, I like daisies.
None of the gifts were personal. No. To anything we knew about Keeley, they were just extravagant gifts.
Yeah. Also, if you put a ring in my croissant, I'm probably going to be pretty pissed. Like, don't mess with my croissants. Like,
I did love Rebecca running up her tab, though. And Rebecca is like a woman who owns a Premier League club and is like, no, I'm still going to run up this woman's tab.
Well, and then she said that the waitress, bottle for you.
Bottle for you.
The way that rich people stay rich is they put the tab on somebody else.
Yeah.
Hoard wealth. That's
capitalism. I did kind of like the, yeah. On this week's episode,
we talk about the finances of Ted Lasso. Best scene in this episode. There's a lot. I will say, like, I don't think I came out and said this like I intended at the beginning of the episode. I think this was my favorite episode of the season. Probably should have led with that instead of waiting 26 minutes. But this was, for me, it felt a lot like a season one or a season two episode. And it was good to get back to that. There was just a lot of stuff that made me feel good. A lot of stuff that I enjoyed seeing. Obviously, everything with Sam. There were emotional moments, those things where you're like, wow, it's amazing watching people talk to each other with that much openness and honesty and compassion. And that's some of the stuff that with all the plot lines we've had this season, and with a lot of the stressor type, you know, plots that we've had, have it's gone away a little bit. And this was such a, just like a warm, like warm bath. Like it would just like let this whole episode wash over me. It was joyous. So I wrote down, I enjoyed almost every scene, I will say, besides like what was going on with Jack and Keely. Everything else, like, I mean, that being said, my favorite scene, I call Dick Strings. Like Dick,
it's the best. Gotta be.
You know, they came so close with like all the different titles that they almost named this to just calling it Dick in a Box.
Oh God.
It was right there.
Missed opportunity.
It was so funny. And every time, I've watched it three times, and every time, every time I think a different part of it's my favorite part of it, from like Roy's face when they think that Jamie's dick was pulled off is just that sentence I never thought I'd say, is priceless, because he's, and this is again, this is after that they've had this like bonding thing. First of all, this whole thing was Roy's idea, and he clearly was like, yes, this is the best idea I've ever had, this is going to be a nightmare. Danny running super close to Jan, so was it Jan Moss that he was next to, but he's just, and they're like, why don't you give him some space, he's like, I'm too afraid. Like, it was so his good. Teammate
so good.
And then, oh gosh, it was just so funny, the whole thing. And they did like dicks on three when they broke it down before they started playing, and they're like, one, two, three, dicks. And Jamie's like, dicks.
I desperately need to clip the sound of in Danny Rojas's voice saying his penis is okay, which is just,
oh yeah,
hang it from the rafters.
That was, I think that was my favorite one line of the episode. That was, it was so good. So, but mine was the heart wrenching part. Like mine was the end.
Yeah.
When just that. Every moment from Sam showing up, seeing that his teammates were working and fixing the restaurant for him, trying to do it as a surprise, them just saying, well, we thought you needed this. Like this is where we were supposed to be, to the second that we find out Sam's dad's name. And then you just know that he didn't know that the restaurant was named after him, and the lights come up. I mean, it was just, like you said, like a quintessential season one, season two, like right at the heartstrings Ted Lasso episode. It totally was, because it was not my favorite of the season, because I felt like it was a little slow to get into. And then it was just like amazing scene after amazing scene at the end. But like, I just ended, you know, like in tears, and like my heart is like full. And I just thought it was such a beautiful, and three seasons worth of paid off moments and text messages and everything about his relationship with his dad, every political stance he's taken. Like it was just such an incredible scene. So I will go with the Ted Lasso moment of like, we just wanted to bawl our eyes out at the end.
Yeah. Alex, what's the best scene in this one?
For me, it was when Sam broke down in the locker room when his dad walks in, you know, and I think for a few reasons, like when I saw the whole Twitter thing, which I think probably made all of us anxious because we know how awful Twitter can be. Yeah. And that temptation when you know you've just got the best comeback to somebody who comes at you, and you've got to decide, is it worth it? Or do I just need to let it go?
Oh, Greg Abbott is my governor. I've sent a lot of angry tweets.
And it's hard, you know? I mean, when you're a hammer, everything looks like a nail. And it's just one of those things that's, it's hard to kind of get past that. So I had a lot of anxiety with the Twitter parts, but especially the shut up and dribble. And obviously, like, we've all covered so many different facets of just that mentality extensively over the past several years. But just that kind of juxtaposition of him and his dad coming in mad, but then Sam realizing like, this is the one place I can fall apart. You know, it was just very emotional. And I know we talked about how it's essentially a show about bad dads and how people react to it. And you have this great dad. And I think he serves as a mirror in a lot of ways. And we see that in the way that like Ted reacts to it, that Ted looks at their relationship and has his own internal thoughts. I mean, I was talking to a friend of mine earlier this evening, he was watching the episode and catching up, and You know, one thing is like he and I both lost our fathers when we were in our late 20s, early 30s. And so, I mean, we don't like talk about it often. It's not like a club or something. So we do make that joke. Like if we have a friend who's lost a parent, we're like, we'll get him the jacket. They can be in the club. But there's just that weird thing of like, as you move on from grief, and he and I both were talking about how that scene made us so emotional, not because we're immediately reminded of just harsh, like painful grief, but it's this idea of like, we had that once with our fathers, and to see that with someone, just see that love, and that it's not that we can't live without it, obviously, but it's like that ache of, gosh, I wish I had the option. I wish I could, you know, have those moments with my dad again, where he might be upset with me for how I reacted, but he loves me at his core. And I just think it was beautiful. The whole thing with Sam and his dad.
And gorgeous. Sam and his dad, I was just saying, has been the running through line of the good dad relationship. That's where like Ted yeah. has seen that relationship Sam has with his dad, and that drew Ted back to Jamie.
Well, I was gonna say Jamie saw that was a huge part of like Jamie's growth too, I think, was seeing and watching Sam interact with his father. The casting of I believe it's Nanzo Anozie, who you might recognize, that's the word, English, from Game mm-hmm. of Thrones, which I'll take you on the journey I went on when I Googled
I'm
things.
So glad this you is how my found brain works. This because I could not place where I had seen this guy, and you solved all the problems for me.
I could not remember, like, I couldn't remember his name, and so I went first to the Game of Thrones IMDb page and tried to estimate like where I thought it was in the story to try and find that episode and then search the cast. Did not work. So then I went to Google and I searched wizards who stole Danny's dragon eggs. And that gave me Piat Pree, which was the like creepy old guy. And so then I Googled his name and something with that. And then it gave me like the warlocks of Karth or whatever. So eventually I got there. I found him. Perfect casting. Yeah. He is such a just like, I look at him and I want to hug that man.
He's a fucking like, unit.
That might be a weird
big dude.
Might be a weird statement, but I would like to hug that man. I would like to be on the receiving end of a hug.
Every sentence he said, I was like, like,
yes,
just like, forgive them. The big whoop and then the little noises he was making. Don't fight back, fight forward. It all just sounded so wise. Like, I can see why Sam goes to him. Also, underrated scene, it's not the best, but we can group like all of the Sam and his dad moments together, was him and Rebecca obviously knowing that he so knew good. That they slept together, and then she realized that he knew that they slept together. Amazing.
So good.
So good.
It was just this moment of like, hi. Like seeing Hannah Waddingham as Rebecca do that kind of like, yes, like these like,
and then it just like, the scene lasted like an extra like 3 or 4 seconds than like perfect. It needed to.
And Higgins' face awkward. Too.
So good.
Higgins' face and that was excellent. And he did, when they were in the locker room, he did the earlobe pull, which is something that like Sam told Ted about in like the first episode or something. Didn't he? Whenever he was stressed, his dad used to help, or like when he was a kid, his dad would like pull on his earlobes. Very cute. Good callbacks from these guys. They know what they're doing.
Can I have like a short, kind of just interject, because I like to check tweets while we talk. So I just want to share this very insightful tweet about Sam and his dad. Okay, ready?
Yeah.
All right.
God.
I thought this was going to be a Ted Becca tweet. I'm sad.
Well, it is. Oh, so prepare God. Yourself. Was just thinking how Sam and his dad can be a way to show Ted that he and his kid will be fine, even if they live far away from each other.
I'm sorry. God. What?
I love our Ted Becca updates every week, but I don't know if we've talked about this on the pod yet, but there is a rising theory, or not even a theory. It's just people justifying like Ted shouldn't go back home. Henry's fine on another continent. And this proves it. Sam and his dad prove you do not have to live around your son. For his
well, child that is bullying other kids, but don't worry.
My favorite was if he went home, he would just be sitting in restaurants by himself eating towers of onion rings. Yeah. Like, he doesn't need to go back. Michelle's moved on. He should too.
How do you guys ever get through anything on this podcast? We're
we
like
don't.
It's like topic two.
I know. We do this, and then we fast track. We will suddenly hit seven topics in 5 minutes. And
like a rapid fire.
I'll start hitting the gas after the ad break. Because I do want to mention shout out to our good friend Mike Golic Jr. The amount of puking at the practice Roy runs is admirable. Really good stuff.
Did anyone pee themselves?
My God, Mike. I will throw in for just a quick other really great scene. I want Coach Beard to do every presentation for me ever from here on out because that was awesome.
Yeah, I mean, I want Coach Beard to do everything ever. I love that man. Sure. Let's take a quick ad break and then get back with the Laughing Liam Award.
We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/BlueWire. Just go to Indeed.com/BlueWire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/BlueWire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Okay, we're back. Laughing Liam Award, which is now combined with Best One-Liner or Joke, because I don't know why I had those separated for so long. Nicole, what stood out to you?
Okay, I have two. So, like, an overall funny bit was Coach Beard and Will swapping roles. I thought that Will was particularly hilarious as Coach Beard. And then also when Beard as Will gave Ted water and he thought it was delicious as water. That was really good. But the actual best one line, we already referred to it a little bit earlier, but it was Danny saying, "It's okay, his penis is okay." All-time great line, and Danny has some of the best lines in the entire show, but he was just so concerned, and it was so genuine that he was so happy that Jamie's penis was okay.
So good. Caroline?
So I wanted to say that Roy should get the Laughing Liam Award, but there wasn't necessarily like a one-liner from him that well, maybe other than the like, next time we do this, we should tie a bunch of guys' dicks to one guy's dick. And they're like, that was a one-time thing, Coach. Absolutely love that. Yes to everything Danny Rojas. Again, the running next to his teammate. I'm going to give Simi a shout out because she had some really funny, when she said we should send her back where she came from, her mom's butthole.
Yeah.
I'm sorry. I am a child. I laughed so hard at that. I don't know why I thought that was so funny.
I want to push back, though, on Roy not having any funny one-liners. Because
I was gonna say,
when Ted is giving his speech about the Blue Collar Comedy Tour, and he says, and
oh, Roy sorry, says, I wrote both of those down,
would have been called Sharp-Dressed Men. God, I hate what you've done to me.
Yep. And then he said one. He said ass squatch, and then he goes fuck.
Yeah, make it stop.
Those are good.
Yeah, okay, those good. Okay, I had those written down and I forgot them. The other thing Beard did was the like when they were tied together, and he's like, "This is what we're doing. Figure it out." I don't know why that made me laugh really hard too. Loved it.
Probably because it reminds you of our editors' meeting.
I actually, when I wrote it down, I was like 100% going to be saying this in that inflection to myself, and no one's, I mean, well, either if I say it to myself, obviously no one else will hear it, but if I say it some point, only Alex will get it, and he'll just be like, figure it out.
You guys can also tie your, you can tie your penises together.
This is what we're doing.
Alex, what was the best joke in this episode?
They've already been said, which is a good thing because I think we're all in agreement. Like, I loved Roy. What was the other thing Roy said? It was like the first little pun he had. I forgot. And I've only
he had the early thing that he
was there something about ass? Wasn't there an ass joke?
He did the ass watch one.
Ass watch.
He did one of the other things I laughed really hard at was when he was like, oh, it's like when your friend tries something new and instead of ignoring it, you like compliment them on it. And that's when Colin turns around and goes, I really like your hat. Roy's like, looks really good. And for some reason that makes me laugh really hard because it's like just it felt it would be out of character season one for Roy, but now he's like, yeah, I like it. It's good. Frames his face well is what Ted said.
The line we haven't talked about is when Beard and Ted are at May's pub and they're yes. talking about, and Jane's been really pressuring me, certain magazines left on the yes, coffee man. Table, and Ted's talking about marriage, and Beard goes, no, I'm talking about pegging. Ted's like, what magazines? Stop.
Ted also had a couple really good lines about like compromise. They called back to that. It was good.
Yeah, what was it when he said like that's why we don't bother learning Baz's girlfriend's names or whatever? He goes, he's a man whore or whatever.
So good. Roy is my laughing Liam Award. I think he's the funniest character in this episode. Really good. Like, it's been so fun seeing him as kind of not like coming out of his shell, but a lot of the Roy laughs that we had gotten previously had been because of his gruffness and him,
yes.
you know, in the, like, I think about the rom-com episode when he just shows up when it's light and like the phone the chimes. Yeah. Stuff like that. And this has been more like him, a little personality, like a little goofy. The thing about what to do to your bully is will remain the funniest thing I've ever seen. But
did he win this award for attempting, like, falling over on the bike? Because that was also something that
we definitely talked about the physical comedy of that entire scene is unparalleled. It's the other, I guess one of this counts as a joke or just a good quote, was Nate's insecurity about being turned down, where he's like, then I can never go back to my favorite restaurant and I'll just sit outside on the curb eating takeaway fish and chips, watching you through the window like some Dickensian orphan.
Street urchin.
Street urchin. That made me laugh so hard too. Oh, so man, good. That was
so good. Nicole, what was the best Ted moment of this episode?
Okay, so at first I was just going to generally go with the goal and the fact that switching schemes and systems like paid off and they like had this beautiful moment. But it was okay, so I think it obviously had to be when Trent got so excited and he's saying the lasso way, it's going to work, it's going to work, it's going to work. And then you have Roy calling him what a fucking dork. And then Ted go, he's our dork. That to me was the perfect Ted moment. It was something that Ted would have done any episode, any point in life. And I just loved it. It was perfect. And it also is everything that we love about the show because like they are dorks totally all the time, but there are dorks.
Yeah. I loved it. That moment in particular that we haven't really talked about yet. We mentioned it in passing, but like Trent coming out and saying, and this is something that I think we've done a good job of talking about, patting ourselves on the back over this season, is that the whatever happens with this team and their what are likely to be eventual successes towards the end of the season, because that's just how sports movies go, is a long build of what Ted has built here. And that what Trent says, like, you haven't switched tactics in a week. You've done this over three seasons. He's implemented a culture of trust and belonging and love among these guys. And then he puts in place this system that is more reliant on those traits than anything. And it's like this perfect, you know, like Trent's book is going to be about this culture change. And I think we have talked about that a lot. And so that moment, like Trent freaking out, especially the guy who in season one, episode one says, is this a fucking joke? Like that guy, you know, coming to this point is wonderful. That like sneaky, one of my favorite moments of this episode. Like I love seeing Trent just all giddy about this. And I mean, plus he found the through line for his book. Like that's nice. Yeah. Having a theme is nice.
As a writer.
as a children's book author.
God damn it.
Alex, what's your best Ted moment in this episode?
I don't know if I had a moment. I I just think it's really nice to see Ted back again. Mm-hmm. You know, I think Sassy's whole thing about him being a mess, and, you know, he was a little offended, but also he knew it was true. And I thought that was really important. And it's just, when you go back to season one and even go back, you know, 10 years ago to the commercials, I think what made him so appealing was kind of the oblivious, like, hey, I'm good at this thing. I can be good at that thing. Even, you know, back when the commercials made him look like an asshole, and they humanized him for this. But in season one, he still had that very optimistic, like, this is going to work. You know, I'm going to fix my marriage. I'm going to come over here. We're going to have fun. And he's watched himself unravel over the course of that. And, you know, speaking as like someone who has a lot of experience being a mess in general. And I was talking to Nicole and Caroline about this idea earlier today. I think you just get caught in things sometimes, and your personal life kind of gets in the way of the professional, and you don't really know how to work that out, and you want to be able to tackle it and you can't. This is the first time I feel like we have Ted back as, you know, who he knows he can be, and he doesn't seem so burdened.
I think my like straight up Ted in the moment thing, I loved the mustache example. Like, that was like Ted in the locker room. Like we said, we've gotten a couple more of those the last few episodes and we missed those. The more like blow your mind, like stay with me, folks. Like, we're getting high on barbecue sauce. The real Ted Lasso moment is when they're all fixing the restaurant. Like, that's the biggest Ted moment of the, even though he's not there. Mm-hmm. Like, that's all the stuff that this has come down to, especially when you look at Jamie dead center and clearly involved in making that happen. With like, cause I think if I remember correctly, Isaac was one of the ones that constantly was like Jamie's henchmen that were bullying Nate, and like, you know, him and Colin were those guys that were doing it, and having those three as the ones that are now the spearhead, the captains, the star, the ones like making this stuff happen is it's the same through line with the Lasso way and et cetera, et cetera.
I just raised my hand just so that you can see that. I know that everyone's listening, but I also, if we're allowed to say, I didn't know the rules.
I cheated.
Categories. Nicole, well, okay, if you're cheating, then I want to back
zero rules.
Okay, we're I'm like that rule
Papa John's
follower.
Not Papa John's, the I am Little a Caesars type commercial.
A, perfect attendance as a child, straight A's, like I'm a rule follower, okay? But if Caroline is tweaking that rule, then I also want to tweak the rule, and I'm sure we're gonna talk about it for other things. But a very Ted moment was Jamie identifying that they need to play through him and not to him. And it was just like such a microcosm of everything that Ted pours into all of the players, but especially Jamie. So if we're able to say a Ted moment in someone else, it was that moment at the whiteboard.
Through me, not to me.
Which is so, I mean, it's wonderful. And Nicole, I just kind of outlining expectations for the show. There was one, I can't remember the movie that Caroline and I were doing a podcast on, but we talked about like breakfast food and breakfast buffets for like 5 minutes, and I don't know how it happened, but that
the Top Gun episode, we bought me Kenny Loggins tickets by the end.
Yeah,
like on the podcast we were
perfection.
We were purchasing tickets.
Perfection. But speaking of Ted stuff, patron Danny Weiser, who is the king of the Big Screen Sports Discord, by the way, he had a question that Ted related that I thought this would be a good time for it. Assuming that Ted is headed back to the States, as I think we've all kind of determined, except for the Ted Beck people, that is happening, do we think he and Beard split up? Beard, parentheses, sorta, has Jane. He's good at his job. He seems comfortable in the UK. Does he stay on as a Richmond assistant while Ted goes back home to coach American football again?
That's a good question.
That would break my heart.
I think they split up.
Yeah. I do too.
I think that Beard has absolutely assimilated into the culture there.
he's pegging now, like he's
he's got a
whole friend group in the Netherlands. Yeah, like
Ziggy Stardust, Piggy Stardust. To like,
I kind of think that they need to grow apart to grow up a little bit in certain ways. So. I do think so. And by the way, just for any Ted Becca listeners, don't worry. This means
there
that
is zero.
Rebecca can still move to Kansas. She's wearing red shoes after all.
She'll click her Louboutins together.
Her red bottoms. So I agree. I think they'll split up, but I don't think Beard is going to stay on with Richmond. I fully see him doing something as random as like Piggy Stardust. Like, I could just see him getting on a bus and heading off somewhere. Like, I just think we, based on what we know about him, what we don't know about him, there's the freedom there that he can kind of go and do whatever he wants. And I don't think he's necessarily a package deal with Ted, but I don't know. That's an interesting question.
Beard is a Rolling Stone. He can be anyone, anywhere, anytime. The Rupert Award for the villain of this episode. I mean, Britain's Secretary of State or whatever.
Yes.
Fuck that person.
Yes.
Naturally.
Yeah, I mean, Brenda Barrett.
Yeah.
This UK bitch. Home Secretary who told Sam to shut up and dribble. The worst. She was terrible.
She reminds me a lot of who saw Bodyguard, the Richard Madden series. Yeah, Caroline, I absolutely knew you would have seen that. Yeah, she reminds me of that.
Oh, I watched that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Guys, I almost put Jack here. That's how much I hate her.
So that's the thing.
I don't like her.
That's the thing. Is Jack a villain? Or because this goes back to the question that patron Aaron Figueroa asked. How does this end? Does this end with like, hey, Keely saying, I am, you know, we're not right for this. Like, I'm really not ready for this. My heart is somewhere else. And Jack kind of being a little peeved, but whatever. Or does this end with like Jack closing down Keely, you know, KJPR because she's so scorned? Like, it's like, how far does this character go?
I lean the former.
God, I hope not. Though I don't think we're done with Shandy. I think Shandy's got something coming back.
Something like, the police should know about.
What if Jack, what if Keely dumps Jack and then the next day she goes and it's just Shandy and Starfucker? Like, Jack is invested in Starfucker. But I don't know. I don't want to think Jack is a villain because I think this show does gray areas so well. Like, I think all of us have been with some type of love bomber before. We've probably love bombed a certain bit in our day, in our youth. And like, I'm not saying it's like an unforgivable sin. I'm saying it comes from a place of insecurity, because when you think you're not enough, you use what you've got to try to keep the person, to try to keep them from leaving. But I've never had a good feeling about her. And I don't, you know, like, a lot of people are more bothered by the fact that she's new and she's random and they don't really understand her. I'm just like, it's a Jane Austen first edition. What are you doing? What are you doing? What you are not a person. That's the ick moment. You walk away.
Yes. Yeah. I don't think she's a villain per se, but I think that I hate the relationship in its current state.
Yeah.
I think it's just going to be a way that she ends up seeing. There's going to be in the next episode or so, hopefully next episode, because I really am craving Roy Keeley content. There's going to be some sort of Roy-esque gesture that reminds her, that reminds both of them, that this is a stupid breakup and they never should have done this to us, because that's what's important, our feelings about it. And it's going to make her start thinking about, like, what actually does she have with Jack? And I think it's going to be one of those situations where Jack is kind of like, you're still madly in love with him. What are you doing with me? Like,
I think that they have set it up to be that, like, Keely actually addressed it in a pretty mature way and asked her to stop doing it. And if she does it again, like, she's recognized that this is a problem, like, has worked through it and identified it. And, like, it would be a huge problem if Jack continues to act this way. So I actually think maybe ultimately, like, Keely is learning about recognizing bad relationships sooner, but I just don't love it. I just don't like it. But no, obviously there was one actual villain in this episode, and then there was just the ick. Like Alex said.
Ugh. Yeah.
Ugh. And Derek from Taste of
Derek is just a wild card.
He is like, not a villain. I'm kidding. He's hilarious.
I need more. It's like, isn't it Derek from Shrinking too?
I
need
Yes, like, just I was going to say, are they all named Derek? Derek.
Big Derek energy.
Derek from Taste of Athens. He's that guy on like a bachelor party or a golf trip. It's like, man, have you slept? Like, he's just like,
I love him.
He's love him. He's something else.
He's given everyone nicknames like 3 hours into it.
Yeah. Oh yeah. He's like, hey, you guys want a cigarette? Like, man, it's 9 a.m. Like, what do you do? What are you doing?
Of course I do. Yeah.
On the pitch, talking the football, talking the soccer action. With this, I really just have two good patron questions for this one. Kevin Frost asks, who do you consider is the heart and soul of the team now? He's on the Jamie Tartt train, but we have you know, we have the, you know, Jamie kind of taking command with Total Football. The heart and soul can be a coach. I mean, there's Isaac as our captain, bruv. We also didn't talk about Danny saying, like,
so good,
saying, like, just dropping so dropping an F-bomb and saying bruv as Isaac. But you've got Isaac, you've got Sam. But Nicole, who's the heart and soul of this team now?
I think it's Jamie. I mean, he is a softie. He is a team leader. They look to him. They're going to play through him. That's how they're going to win. And I think it was pretty clear. I know someone mentioned it earlier that Jamie was definitely involved in the decision to, like, fix Sam's restaurant. But I remember thinking about it earlier in the season when he was there, when they all went to that soft launch. And that would never have been the kind of thing that old Jamie would have gone to. And I would not be surprised if we get a little more explicit information that, like, he planned, he got everyone to go help fix the restaurant. Like, he's just, he's that guy now. And he is the heart and soul. I mean, he's always been the best player, but I think now he is actually the best leader. And I love Isaac. I love all these guys, but it's Jamie's team. And I really think that he was the one who organized the restaurant fixer upper.
Alex, how many copies of that icon hat do you think Jamie has? Because that's a black hat. So if you sweat through that thing, it's done. You can't, like, wear it casually anymore.
That's true. I don't
is
know.
Is that a thing?
If We've you're a sweat boy like before. Me, it sure is. And if, like, Jamie and all of his hair,
now
yeah.
Now I'm sad Mike's not here for that one. He would have loved a good sweat boy reference.
This is where Mike and I would be like, yeah, like, we've ruined some shirts, some hats, like, definitely.
Side note, and I don't think I brought it up on the podcast before, but if you follow the Ted Lasso's costume designer, Jackie Levy, on Instagram, what she does every week is she'll post screenshots from the episode and she tags every designer of every character's ensembles. So, like, if it's a photo of Rebecca, it'll be her jewelry, her hat, if she's wearing it on this stuff.
You mean her lasso ring?
Yeah.
Her knot ring that ties that bind. And what have you. You know, it starts, ties the letter T for Ted. And tenderness and together and Topeka, Kansas.
Toll mates.
Oh, man. So is there any argument to Jamie not being the heart and soul of the team at this point? He is literally who they are playing through.
Yeah. And the other part, too, is, I mean, one of the early things this season was his desire to get better on the pitch, mm-hmm. like in the training with Roy. And if you notice in all of the drills, like the running stuff, he was first, like he was ahead and didn't look like he was, I mean, at the very end, he was like still hunched over but he wasn't throwing up whole Cheerios like Bumper Catch. So he's ready for the impending class war, which is also
yeah, the
a
only,
great line.
The only other option I think is Danny, just cause like the joy, like yeah. he is, his personality is rubbed off on a lot of the players, like they really are more joyous and loving and all of that. But no, it's Jamie, and I just love it. I love it. I never gave it's up so on good. Him, unlike Alex.
The irredeemable.
The irredeemable Jamie Tart.
Speaking of Danny and football is life. Patron John Craig. This isn't really a question. It's more of a topic, but I have a question at the end of it. He said, revisit the triangle talk in the back of the bus. I think he's referring to the Amsterdam episode. He said, Ted is talking football, but he's really describing healthy relationships. I think we're about to understand the deeper meaning of football is life. I'm going to take that a step further. The one a big question we have at the end of this episode, not big, but it's there, is what is number four? Ted's four rules of total football. What it, you know, is, I think it's believe. I think at the end, it might be one of the last things that we see number four is written in is believe. And even if I am predicting it now, and even if I am right, it will still give me the chills and possibly make me cry. So Caroline, do we have thoughts on what number four might be?
I like that. I also, did you see someone called him on Twitter, the believe uniforms, the believe alternates. This is the first time we saw the yellow alternate jerseys for away. Cause I hope this does not mean they're getting rid of the oranges. Cause those were very clean. But yeah, I like Believe. I loved when Danny was just so emphatic about like, that's what it is. Number four, we figured it out. It's like sacrifice or whatever. And he was like, not it. I don't know what it is, but it's not that. So I like Believe. I think that would be, again, this is one of those things where, and I think they can do it now at the very end, because at the interim stages, like the end of season one, we didn't have the cliche finish. We didn't have the, like, everything goes perfectly the whole time. Like, so again, I need my like victory over West Ham. I need Jamie to be a huge part of that. I need Ted to be happy and the Believe thing to come through, and I will absolutely be right with there with you getting goosebumps on all of it.
Yeah. I need it. I know we're in for like 15 big time goosebump moments as this show wraps. Like that, the finale is going to be, I might have to like,
and Colin's going to get down to kiss his fella. Damn it.
Yes.
Love that.
Yeah. It's going to be great.
Yeah. I don't think you realize how psychologically healthy that is award for which character showed the most personal growth in this episode. Can we just rename this the Jamie Award when we're talking about personal growth from episode one to now? I feel like it's always Jamie at this point. Like Jamie is the one, like Jamie unselfishly decide, like, I'm not gonna, you know, you don't need to play to me, play through me, and I will facilitate this offense. Like he is,
I mean, he made the extra pass. There was a whole season about that.
Yeah. He is and, now, and Chris Paul.
He also didn't want special treatment. He was disappointed when he got the swap and it said Jamie to Jamie, and that they still wanted him to be a scorer. I mean, like, he wants to be part of the experiment in everything that they're doing and experiencing all of it. So I think you should rename it. Can I give one practical winner here?
Of,
like, just something that actually is very psychologically healthy? Listen, Sam is correct. The spoons should match the forks. It is an important sign of growth. I remember how adult I felt when I first got a full matching set of silverware. That is healthy, and he got made fun of for caring about that. And listen, yes, great food means, well, I'll eat it off of plastic fork and plastic spoon, but no, it is incredibly healthy to care about your silverware matching. So shout out to Sam for that. I really resonated with me.
That's, I mean, I'll throw Nate's hat in the ring for this one this week. I thought Nate made big strides. Mostly, again, when he literally fell on his face and he dusted himself off. He still got out there and asked her out. She said yes. Also, if you ask Siri on your, makes sense, on your Apple product, the same question that he asked, like how, it's, I guess it has to be the exact wording, and it's like, how do you know if a girl really likes you or is just being nice to you? You can't. But the response from Siri is delightful. So I don't know how long it's going to last.
So it
does that, it?
Yeah, because I tried it a few times. And another one is like, think about what Nate would do and do the opposite.
Yeah, that's the one I got.
That's the one I got. That's what mine said.
And I think the one I got was just, will you ever learn, Wonderkind? Oh, sorry, Nate.
Man, Apple with the product placement has just been incredible. And especially with the music. This was a good music episode.
Another good music
episode. I didn't write any of the needle drops down, except for the song that they ended the show with.
What is that?
It is called Enjoy by Tekno. Tekno, T-E-K-N-O. I really enjoyed that.
Okay, but can I just say, it's not just about the needle drop. Huge Nora Ephron reference in this episode.
Oh, the
beginning of the episode.
Yeah, the opening.
You've got mail. Dreams. Cranberries. You've got mail. Ephron. It's all happening.
Oh,
and like the
I thought you were going with
New York.
The walking. Yeah, see, that's why I thought, I didn't even put the songs together. I thought you were going with the like people opening their shops for the day and the characters walking by.
It happens during Dreams.
Yeah.
In the beginning. If you go, and that's what happened. Like, and you've got mail, the little montage where she's talking and I met a guy online or whatever. I don't know.
I met a guy.
And so, which is funny because a few days ago I was saying, I really need people to stop comparing. I need people to stop saying this is what would happen if Nora Ephron wrote a sports movie, because it's not true. That's not how she wrote it. Whatever. There's just a bunch of people who saw You Got Mail and When Harry Met Sally, and they're like, I know Nora Ephron. No one knows Nora Ephron. Okay. Whatever. We're not going to
What I'm gathering here is that this is a rom-com. this is really about.
It was always a rom-com the whole time. So,
because they did not share any time on screen this week. That means
which means that. They're in but love.
He said the word soulmate.
Red string. He wore a red shirt today, and if you go back through all of the times in which he wore a red shirt for the team in which red is one of its main color schemes, let's really dig into that, because she also wore red this episode when she went to support the team that wears red most of the time. So very,
you guys need to do an entire episode debunking all of the confirmation bias.
That is an Alex solo episode. That is 2 hours of her with a whiteboard, like
exhibit. Just like Charlie Day.
Yep.
Exactly.
She'll just be arguing with herself the whole time too. It'll be great.
I know. I'll present both sides. Be like, no. Well, I made a comment the other day about. Well, I was making a joke while I was talking about how Ted Lasso discourse is so divisive, and the joke I made was like essentially, if you don't think that Ted and the dartboard from season one are soulmates, then you don't know what you're talking about and you're very stupid. However, I guarantee you right now, if I put my mind to it, I could make a whole case for why Ted and the dartboard should be together and why they've told us the whole time that they were going to end up together.
Barbecue sauce came back again when he had the thought process with the onion rings, and onion rings are sort of circle like the dartboard. Boom.
Also tends to get two beers together all the time, or him and Beard get them together. They're never alone. It's always a pair, and they're in the bar where the dart lives.
Yep.
Yes. And there really was a dartboard in the thing last week when he was having the not hallucination. There was a dartboard when they did the triangles. That's true.
I think we could get at least 45 good minutes of Alex responding to Ted Becca tweets, like talking through her response.
I don't want to respond to
bonus episode.
The number of times that I've almost quote tweeted with like, you are a very unserious person. Because unserious has become one of my
yes. The succession meme, the one where like, I love you, but you are not a serious person.
You're not a serious person. Yes.
Anyways, I think for the food poisoning award, I think we've all kind of talked about the moment that gave us the most stress, which is anything associated with Jack, the love bombing.
Yes.
So we can skip right over that to best time, worst time. Joyous category. Caroline, who had the best time in this episode?
Roy
for sure.
Just again, the joy on his face when he thought Jamie's dick had been ripped off was... And he got to just, again, that whiteboard scene. I think next time, he was so excited about that. He had the picture drawn up. I think Roy had the best time. Plus, they saw, that really was, we didn't get a lot. We've talked before, we don't get a ton of actual soccer in a lot of episodes. But that was such a fun way to show, like, oh, they figured it out without it being like, oh, and they scored 4 goals in the second half and won because they figured it out. Like, so yeah, I think Roy had the best time. I think he really enjoyed himself.
Alex, do we think that was Nate's first ever like real date, not counting the fake setup one with the model?
Oh, sad. Yeah, probably.
So we could throw him in for best time.
Yeah, he probably sure. Had a good time.
I think I would give him that. I mean, the redemption tour is underway. He asked a girl out. She said yes. He's turning a corner, and Siri called him a wunderkind.
It's true.
It's a lot. It's
true. And he got to see his lovely mom and sister.
I loved them.
They were a lovely duo.
I liked them too.
Nicole, did anyone have a bad time?
Well, Sam had a bad time. He got in a Twitter spat against a far-right political figure.
Which is tough.
And had his restaurant broken into. So... as much as I got emotional at the end about everyone coming together to help fix it, that's pretty bad. Pretty bad.
And no one would listen to him about the damn spoons. So, also true.
How sad was it that he was bringing spoons?
I know.
And he realized that the place it got broken into.
Ugh. Love Sam.
He had a tough one. He had a tough one, but he's on his way back up.
He is.
And he has an amazing dad. So, he's good, but that was tough. And I think, again, Alex mentioned this, like the online stuff it hits close to home for a lot of people. And then obviously to see it then immediately kind of impact your safety. And it was a lot, but yeah, so he had the worst time, but he also has the best people around him.
Yeah, I would agree. I mean, he got lifted up with love by his coworkers and by his teammates, and that's beautiful. And speaking of Sam
Higgins, I was gonna say Higgins ended up with like third degree T burns. That so he probably had a bad time.
That should definitely suck.
That's up there.
That definitely sucked. I don't even think, does he say anything all episode? It's really just like his reaction to getting scalded with that tea.
Yeah, that's about it, I think. Because I don't think he says anything at the game. He just has that great like look on his face all the time where he's like, ah. Yeah.
Yeah. Speaking of Sam, Lenny Harris Pinch Hitter Award for Best Supporting Character. I think it's Olaf for sure. I said that very like white guy speaking Spanish. But he's great. But we had a patron question too. Andrew Teagle said, who is the supporting cast MVP of the season so far? He said Will Kitman or Mo Bumbercatch, but I think Will Kitman has been dynamite.
Yes.
Who is the supporting MVP? I guess our Lenny Harris of the season so far.
This is where we run into
Colin.
Colin's been good.
But like Danny is Colin too main of a character right now?
Right. Yeah. That's where we have.
That's
to...
always our problem. Yeah. Is we yes. can't ever define what's
important. Well, that's
we've done how many of these episodes now, and we still are asking these questions.
Well, with this show, there's the head like Ted, obviously, Rebecca, Keely, Roy, like them for Beard. Sure. Them for sure. I mean,
Jamie.
Yeah, Jamie now, but then there are some like Sam last season was a really relevant character. And then until this episode, it has been more, he's been more on the sidelines. So it's been kind of a fluctuating thing. But if we're talking like people who just get snippets, like get small chances to shine, honestly, Danny has been like that. Because Danny has not had since
he doesn't have his own storyline.
Since
though.
Season two, episode one, there's not been really anything solely about Danny. He has just been there for comedic relief and to be joyous and to discuss losing his virginity to Zava Boots. I would say Higgins is a supporting character and he's been wonderful. Per usual. But in terms of like the Will Kitman and Bumbercatch are in like a even more kind of minor set of characters where they
even
are.
Yeah, I'd put Jan Moss in there with them.
Caroline, I think I'm on board with your hot Jan Moss theory. Like, I think he's pretty handsome.
Where did that? And it wasn't that I thought he was ugly before, but then they did when he did the press thing. Because again, we didn't have a lot of just like Jan Moss when he did the little press thing and they said like, oh, luckily our spirits were broken. I was like, good Lord, Jan Moss. I love
and if the character Jan Moss was listening to this, who'd be like, oh, it's because I've started like changing my beard differently.
Yeah, I changed my hair slightly.
You're now seeing something in me that you did not see before. So you're correct.
I would say Isaac is also in that like sub like character. Like the most we've ever gotten from him was like when he became a captain, it was like an emotional scene, but also like doing the haircut. That was like the most that we got from him. So I think those are good. I would say for this episode, Nate's sister, like really stole the show. She had great advice. She got the mom to open up about the dating history. So I would say she stole the scene.
She was excellent.
Alex, what are your thoughts on the best supporting character for this episode?
I still don't know how we're counting supporting characters. But
listen, it's all, again, there are no rules.
Because I agree with everything. I think we can't have like 12 main characters. Like, I think to me, Trent is a supporting character. And I thought,
okay, then he's
in
him for this season. He'd be
for this season. Yeah, that's a good point. The big chill, we do get a big chill. We probably get multiple in this episode, maybe the most of any episode this season. I would say that it's between Jamie doing the, you know, through me, not to me. The goal, the only bad part about that beautiful goal is that it is narrated by Arlo White, who is participating in sports washing for the Kingdom of Saudi Arabia, which is a big bummer. And then the team cleaning the restaurant, which is fantastic.
That's the winner for me. Yeah.
I think it's the restaurant, but I would go second was Jamie at the whiteboard.
Yeah.
I do think correct about Arlo. I do think Arlo and Chris have had just really funny dialogue this season. And I have to say, friend of the pod, Adam Amin, was saying earlier today, he's like, that's just not how it would really go. Like, Adam, it's a show. They have to be funny. He's like, I know, it's very funny to me. I really laughed about it.
Okay, but this is like, this would be like Adam watching Grey's Anatomy with a doctor who's like, you know, this isn't actually how hospitals work.
This is
how,
or like any of us watching any journalism show ever.
Oh, like, yes.
You know, we don't all sleep with our sources. Either way. Anyway, sorry, that just jumped into my head. I just thought it was so funny because I think they've had some really good one-liners this year.
He said, but going back at this, I had these written down as the, he's like, what do you even say? And where did it go? Why are we so bad? Should we just go home? Like, those were the questions that they should address at halftime.
It's really good.
Should we just go home? Oh man, that was good.
So good. Wrapping up, what do we need answered this next episode? Or what do we think is going to be answered? What, like, what's next? We've got kind of summation of things. We've got whatever the hell is going on with Jack and Keely. We get a reference. We get a conversation about what are people calling him now? Dutch McDreamy? Is that the?
Yes.
So we get.
Oh man. So that was one of the other penis references I didn't get to on my list of penis references from this episode, where she does the thing like, oh, it transcended sex. Like, it was, and then she, Keely says magic. She says the like frizzling, and she goes, but I would have liked to see his penis.
So one thing about the Dutch guy that I was going to bring up here and talking about like the future and questions and everything, kind of where he's going to fall. So one thing we do know is Ted Lasso's casting director, Theo Park, was looking for a very young Dutch speaking girl last fall when they were finishing Ted Lasso for an award-winning TV series shooting in London. And if you look at Theo Park's repertoire of things, the only award-winning TV series they would have been working on last year would have been Ted Lasso. And it was for a short, like a small role in an award-winning TV series. And they had to be available.
So how will they find each other though?
So my friend's wife has a theory. So my friend Josh Black and his wonderful wife, Jessica, I love this theory and I hope it's true. She thinks that when Rebecca was drying her clothes, because remember we've seen her with this matchbook all season. Her thinking is it's possible that the matchbook fell out in the dryer if it was still like in her pocket. And that he finds the matchbook and ends up back at the restaurant somehow.
I love that. That is the most dreamy. Hallmark. That is the most Hallmark way.
Very
that
Hallmark
this goes.
Way.
Yeah.
It's a very rom-com-y
I think there's
way.
Also potential, like, she's very famous, right? Essentially.
Yeah.
Like, he could look, there could have been something in the paper the next day about her and the owner of IX, like, shaking hands, whatever. And then he goes, that's her. And then looks up whatever. That's the less romantic way. I love the matchbook.
Because that way is more difficult too. We kind of talked about this last week, but like, okay, he sees her, like he's famous, but like he shows up to the stadium and he's just trying to explain to the security guard, like, listen, she fell into the canal. She ended up on my boat.
We had a moment.
Massaged her feet. Like, trust me, just go ask her about the foot massage. And I promise she's gonna let me in.
But, but something has to come up with being struck by lightning. So maybe he does this. She is actually literally struck by lightning, but is okay outside of the stadium. And that's where reunited.
And you know where they have lightning storms? In Kansas. And
oh, come on.
Here's one. She goes to the restaurant. We'll tie it all together. She's at the restaurant having dinner. It's a storm. Lightning like strikes outside and like illuminates things, and she looks to the door and he's standing there because
that's
he found
scary
the
kind of like a scary movie. Yeah, that's the door.
Okay, fine.
Dutch Michael Myers.
Okay, fine. So then she looks to the door and he's like doing the like really non-intimidating shaking off the rain from your coat and pulls his hood back, and then she sees it's him. Is that better?
Okay,
that
so here's an unrelated resolution thing.
The spec on topic.
I did get a spec on topic. Okay, so Richmond has lost a lot of games this season. Like, I know that there was a comment made about, like, are they going to get relegated again? But I thought the whole plot remember at the end of season one, it was they get relegated, then they get back to the Premier League, and then they go win the whole thing. I thought they were going to be, like, really good, but I don't know where the football resolution can go. Like, I don't know how good they can be. That's what I wonder.
I don't either.
Like, I know we saw them take a step.
And part of that is because I don't understand the Premier League that well, so that's a big failing on my part. But I need someone, because they were really good with Zava, so they've racked up some wins, and apparently they've been really shitty.
But then they lost a couple matches with him, too.
Mm-hmm.
They've lost at least five, based on very loose math from trying to remember things that, like, Arlo and the other guy said, where it's like,
I think we need to get a little more clarity on what's at stake from a football standpoint.
Yes, we need that table montage again, where they show the, like, table of standings.
Yeah, they have
and
to be
see
playing
them, like...
towards something. We also need Roy to realize that he needs Keeley back, or some sort of we need Roy and Keeley to be back in a scene together.
We haven't seen Phoebe in six episodes.
Yeah, more Phoebe, please.
Yeah,
that's a mistake.
Yeah,
I think.
Ooh, does Phoebe know the other Dutch girl somehow? Are they pen pals?
Exchange student.
That would be so cute.
It would be adorable.
That would be a good one.
Another thing too is, like, we know, going back to Roy and Keeley, that little clip from the trailer where they're holding hands and sitting on a bed. We know that's Jamie's childhood bedroom, because if you zoom in on the shots, like, it's got his diploma on the wall and stuff. And I want to know, how do they end up back in his home? And I'm really scared that his mom dies or something happens that brings him back home. And that scares me.
I love how Alex said that so matter of factly, that we all,
you know how the heart connects to the left. Sorry, we saw a tweet earlier. Never mind. Anyways,
you know, he's holding her left hand, which is important because
after the trailer came out and everybody was, like, zooming in on stuff, one of the things they zoomed in on is, like, there was a diploma on the wall of the room where they were holding hands that said Jamie Tartt. And it was, like, the most, imagine, like, going to Canva and just finding a template that said diploma. Like, that's what it looked like. It was just like, diploma, Jamie Tartt. And so that's how we do, like, okay, they're sitting on presumably his bed in his childhood bedroom. Why are they home, you know, at Jamie's family home? Like, what are they
doing? I don't want him to go through any sad stuff.
I know. And especially, like, we haven't met his mom, but we know she's an angel. Like, we know she's kind of the redeeming quality.
Not ready for this emotional.
What if it's his dad? So that would be much more in tune with the themes.
That'd be cool. That would be great.
Oh, okay.
It's a show about dads, everyone.
How many more episodes do we have? This is too many things that need to be resolved.
Good
thing they're all feature film length at this point.
I remember when, like, the first season you can get through in, like, an afternoon because they're all 30-minute episodes. Yeah. Now it's like, if it's under 55 minutes, I'm like, I have been robbed.
Been bamboozled.
Bamboozled.
Hoodwinked.
The LA Times did an article. Sorry. Our Ted Becca endgame.
No.
I'm not.
What is the thing about, like, not lending
credibility to
these
things? I worry that we're going to be, what if we're the wrong ones, guys?
I know. That's why I don't want to write anything about it until this thing is done, because I'm not going to look like a fool. I'll talk shit all day long, and then I can come back and say, okay, sorry for talking shit.
Yeah, we're,
like, you can't put that in print.
We're up here on the aircraft carrier with the Mission Accomplished banner hanging behind us, and turns out
that aircraft carrier is in the middle of Kansas.
Clicking my red bottom shoes three times. Go home right now. Oh.
wearing my dress that is opened at the chest so that my heart is more accessible to Ted, and my Man United scarf is showing just Ted side.
They're gonna find this podcast. No. And we're gonna be
we don't have that many listeners. We're fine.
Patrons do not sell us out. We're depending on you.
Patrons are steel traps. They're good. With that being said, this was great. Y'all are great. Had a lot of fun. Nicole, where can the people follow you?
You can follow me at Twitter at Nicole Auerbach, AUERBACH. You can also find me on Instagram And really wherever. You can read my stuff at The Athletic. I'm on the radio, Sirius XM. And I'm also in Alex's and Caroline's text messages a lot. So if you want to hack into their phones, I'll be there. Perfect.
Hack into their Twitter because no one has two-factor verification anymore. Alex, where can the people find you?
At Alex McDaniel on Twitter or at forthewinfcw.usatoday.com.
Caroline?
You can find me at Alex McDaniel 1, but with a blue check mark, because I'm going to pay $8 to be Alex's burner.
Alex McDaniel, but with a 1 as the L.
Yeah. I'm just going to say things like, biscuits are terrible. Just kidding. I don't believe that at all. At CW Darnie on both Instagram and Twitter. And you'll know it's really me if there's a bunch of dog pictures.
That is correct. Fact check true.
To be clear.
And if you enjoyed this episode of Big Screen Sports, please remember to subscribe wherever you get your podcast. Rate and leave a review for an Apple podcast. If you want to support the show and ask questions in future Ted Lasso episodes, join the Patreon. If you're a baseball fan, listen to my interview series from Phenom to the Farm that is presented by Baseball America. Friend of this show, Ryan McGee, was on the most recent episode. Great interview with him. A lot of fun there. And as for us and Ted Lasso, we will see you sometime next week because these have no set date. Thanks for listening.
Whether you're a world-class athlete or a podcaster like me, we all understand the importance of mental and physical well-being and proper recovery for top-notch performance. That's why I'm excited that Unified Healing is sponsoring this podcast. Unified Healing is a new and super innovative global network of wellness centers powered by Energy Enhancement System, or EE System. If you haven't heard of the EE System, you'll want to listen up. This technology promotes wellness, deep relaxation, purification, and rejuvenation. In hundreds of locations across the globe, access to a center is easy and affordable. Interested in experiencing the EE System technology for yourself? Go to unifiedhealing.com/bluewire to learn more and find a center near you. That's unifiedhealing.com/bluewire. No material or testimonials on the Unified Healing website are intended to be viewed as medical advice or a substitute for professional medical advice, diagnosis, or treatment. Always seek the advice of your physician or other qualified healthcare provider with any questions you may have regarding a medical condition or treatment and before undertaking a new healthcare regimen, including EE System.